From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey Tuesday claimed to have killed at least 260 Syrian Kurdish fighters and Islamic State militants in a four-day offensive in the northwest Afrin province to clear the Turkish frontier of a security threat. The sound of Kurdish fighters exchanging gunfire with Turkish forces. President Donald Trump is expected to express U.S. concern about Operation Olive Branch in a phone call Wednesday with his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. At the State Department, spokesperson Heather Nauert and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson conveyed his alarm to the Turkish foreign minister.
The secretary has been frank and has been clear, and I think that's evident in the fact that he's had at least three conversations with him, in addition, negotiations and conversations that our embassy officials may be having as well. So I think that shows the level of concern.
However, Nauert said the U.S., a NATO ally of Turkey, understands Ankara's security concerns.
As much as we are concerned about destabilizing activities in northwestern Syria, we fully understand Turkey's concerns about different terrorist organizations.
The U.S. has urged Turkey to limit the military operation. Ankara said it will be short-lived. The main objective is to neutralize the so-called YPG Kurdish militia. Ankara insists they're terrorist allies of the outlawed Kurdish Workers' Party, or PKK. In the eastern Libyan city Benghazi, the death toll is nearly 30, with dozens wounded following a double car bombing. The first blast occurred outside a mosque. Moments later, a second blast tore through people, including security personnel who had gathered after the first blast. It's not clear who was responsible. Forces loyal to renegade General Khalil Haftar took control of the city last July. This is VOA News. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has told Reuters the Trump administration's strategy to advance Israeli-Palestinian peace will be unveiled hopefully this year if the Palestinians return to the negotiations. The peace process has been stalemated since 2014. Pence said the White House has been working with its partners in the region to see if a framework for peace is possible. Regional analyst Russell Stone, professor emeritus of American University, said he has no idea what's in it.
It seems to be a kind of a phantom peace plan. What Vice President Pence has dangled is, of course, the prospect of revealing it once the parties to the dispute say they're willing to enter in negotiations. So it's really a two-step process before we'll ever know what's in the peace plan.
Pence said he and President Donald Trump hope it would improve the chances for peace. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, speaking in Paris Tuesday, said Syria may still be using chemical weapons against its own people after rescue workers accused Damascus of using chlorine gas in the rebel-held enclave of eastern Ghouta.
Only yesterday, more than 20 civilians, most of them children, were victims of an apparent chlorine gas attack. The recent attacks in East Ghouta raise serious concerns that Bashar al-Assad's Syrian regime may be continuing its use of chemical weapons against its own people.
Tillerson accused Russia of complicity since Moscow intervened in the conflict on the side of Syria in 2015. Venezuela's pro-regime constituent assembly announced Tuesday elections are to be held by the end of April. President Nicolas Maduro, the hand-picked successor to Hugo Chavez, is expected to seek re-election but remains deeply unpopular as the South American country's economy collapses. Tulane University Venezuela specialist David Smild said the assembly violated electoral law in setting the time frame.
They almost always take place in December. In 2012, they were moved up to October, and they've never taken place in the first semester. But I think, constitutionally, it can happen any time this year. But the electoral law says that there should be 6 months of advance notice, so they're clearly violating that law.
Critics fear a fraudulent outcome as Mr. Maduro controls the political machinery in the country and commands a core of supporters while the political opposition remains divided. The UN has accused Congolese security forces of targeting UN monitors during clashes Sunday with anti-government protesters. At least six people were killed, dozens wounded when police opened fire on the marchers, demanding that President Joseph Kabila step down. A UN rights monitor was injured. South African anti-apartheid activist and ex-wife of the late President Nelson Mandela has been hospitalized with a kidney infection. 81-year-old Winnie Madikizela Mandela is expected to make a full recovery. And President Donald Trump will roll out the red carpet for a state visit for French President Emmanuel Macron in April.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An opposition member in the DRC says the group doesn't trust the Kabila government to investigate the killing of peaceful protesters.
You know that UN expert has been killed 1 year ago. Have you heard that they arrested people, killed them? Have those killers be prosecuted? No. So I think that is just a waste of time.
Albert Puela is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. An official says most Sudanese want President Omar al-Bashir to run for a third term. Another fuel shortage in Burundi leads to a price hike, and Sierra Leone's ruling party challenges the citizenship of an opposition candidate in the March 7th election.
The argument of Mr. Sanko was that Yom Kella had dual citizenship, which is in contravention of Section 76(1)(a) of the 1991 Constitution.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. Guinea-Bissau is still without a prime minister since 2015. And young Rwandese seek to reshape the narrative about their country. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An opposition member in the Democratic Republic of Congo says the group doesn't trust the government of President Joseph Kabila to investigate and prosecute those responsible for the killing of peaceful protesters. Abra Puela of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement says too many killings have gone on in the DRC with impunity. Congolese security forces this past Sunday killed six people and injured scores during demonstrations calling for President Joseph Kabila to step down. DRC Human Rights Minister Marie-Ange Mushubikwa said Tuesday that the government will prosecute police officers who opened fire on the protesters. But Puela says the opposition does not trust the Kabila government, and the only solution to resolving the ongoing political crisis is for President Kabila to step down.
You know that UN expert has been killed 1 year ago. Have you heard that they arrested people, killed them? Have those killers be prosecuted? No. Soldiers or member of Mr. Kabila's bodyguard killed people in the end of last year, the 21st of December. Nobody was arrested. And soldiers gunned people, just demonstrators, but nobody was arrested. So I think that is just a waste of time, because I'm sure that he just said just for joke and we don't trust the regime. No. I think that enough is enough. Mr. Kabila has to go. This is really the solution. And we are calling the international community to help, because people are demonstrating that they are really tired about this regime.
But Mr. Puela, even though you know you're saying that in the past, the government has not prosecuted people who committed crimes, but now the government is saying it is ready to prosecute.
We are waiting to see what they do, because I'm not sure that they can know the one who did that. We know who used to give the commandment. We know the chief of army in our country, and who used to give orders to kill and to prevent people from demonstrating. No, no way.
One excuse that the government gave on Tuesday was that the security forces were provoked by some vandals or bystanders who was attacking the security forces.
No, all of us, we had Bibles, we had green leaves of palm, we had our just things for prayers, and nobody threw even a little stone to one of them. How can you guess that people are in the church, they come and fight them? Can you guess that people in the church can provoke them? No. Just when we finished our praying, they come directly to prevent people to go out. This is what happened. They are just lying.
Now, the opposition, the Rassemblement, what is the reaction to this whole thing that happened on Sunday?
We will have a meeting tomorrow morning. I will come back to you to give the reaction of Rassemblement tomorrow.
The government wants to have the election in December this year. Where do you all stand on that?
You know, we can't have fair election whenever Mr. Kabila will stay in the power. We can't have fair election because he is organizing things so that he can cheat all time he's a shooter because he wants to maintain majority in his camp. And the one he loses a point as the one who can succeed to him, he's the one who will be elected. Last elections in 2011, Mr. Tshisekedi was the one who won. We know what's happening because whenever we'll have Mr. Kabila, that's why we beg for a little transition without Mr. Kabila. As Mr. Kabila will be there, we won't have fair election because Mr. Nanga is someone who obeyed to Mr. Kabila. Everything Mr. Kabila can say, he will do that. So we don't trust in this regime, and that's why we are really congratulating Catholic leaders so that they have the momentum now. We are behind them, and we want Mr. Kabila to leave the power.
Albert Puela is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. An official says most Sudanese want President Omar al-Bashir to run for a third term despite a constitutional provision that the president cannot run again when his current term ends in 2020. But Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says there are calls to change the current constitution to what he calls a permanent one so that President Bashir can seek another term because more Sudanese want him to run again. Last Saturday, the ruling National Congress Party Parliament, known as the Shura Council, failed to discuss Mr. Bashir's re-election. Information Minister Bilal says it is too early to discuss President Bashir's re-election.
It is not one of the issues. It's not one of the agenda. This is a normal and a routine gathering of some of the National Congress constituencies. This is the Shura Assembly, which is scheduled every year to meet. And they say that it is early to talk about the re-election of the Bashir, and we have 2 years. But I assure you, many, many other parties other than the NCP, also in many states of Sudan, they are calling for the re-election of Bashir. But the time is not now, it's still maybe next year they can call for this.
But can the president run again? Because I understand that he cannot run again for another term, a third mandate.
No, actually, this is because of the constitution. But there is a tendency now that a permanent constitution should be done before 2020. And if this is a constitution, is a project constitution. If we go for the permanent constitution before 2020, there is no actually there will be a constitutional objection for him to run for the re-election. Otherwise, an amendment of the constitution can be done.
So when you talk about permanent constitution, you're talking about amending the current constitution to allow the president to run?
There are two opinions. One is amendment. The other one is a permanent constitution to be agreed about before 2020. So if this is happening, there will be no legal step to prevent him from re-election again.
If that is the case, it seems to me your government or your country doesn't see what's happening around Africa. And around Africa, people want change. And to amend the constitution will be contrary to that.
No, actually, we have an exceptional situation in Sudan. Now we have a national dialogue which have got results. And the grantee for implementation of these recommendations is Bashir himself. Bashir has got a very actually overwhelming popular allies and all the Sudanese. I can tell you frankly that more than 70% of the Sudanese want him to continue, not only the NCP. So the man has got a very actually strong popularity in Sudan. And this is actually will oblige him to run again for re-election, not because he wants or not because the NCP wants.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Today's Wednesday, the 24th day of January, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Another fuel shortage in Burundi this time has led to a 7% price hike. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
Burundi has been experiencing a fuel shortage for the last 3 weeks, bringing some businesses in the capital to a standstill. Initially, the government blamed the shortage on technical problem that it said was created during the Christmas and the New Year Day holidays. Daniel Mintabakana, the director in charge of petroleum in the Ministry of Energy and Mines, explains the factors behind the fuel price increase.
There are two reasons. One is because of the excess of our current money, it's still considered the value of dollars. Second is because the price on the international level has increased.
According to the World Bank, Burundi's inflation rate for the last year was at 8.7% compared to 5.5% in 2016. But the business people fear the fuel price hike could automatically affect the already fragile business environment. Emeli Ndihokubwayo is a trader in Bujumbura. She says that the prices of the commodity will automatically increase because of the high fuel cost. Emeline says that she hasn't been selling well commodities for the past 2 years because of the people do not have money to buy. Some foreign investors who preferred not to be recorded said that there's a sharp decline of market demand in the country and that the business activity decreased to 30% since 2015. They say that lack of foreign currencies is a major challenge and that the leading cause of the price inflation in the country. Denis Shimirimana, the Secretary General of Burundi Chambers of Commerce, said that the government should provide foreign currency for key investors in the country or risk high inflation.
The current climate in Burundi today is not good. It's mainly due to the lack of foreign currency, due to the suspension of multilateral cooperation or bilateral cooperation for a country which almost imports all main articles. If you have not enough foreign currency, it's a problem.
Burundi is relatively gaining stability after the political violence that erupted in 2015 that led to more than 1,000 people losing their lives. The government is now struggling to stabilize the economy after the European Union and the United States suspension of direct aid to the government. The move created a foreign currency shortage, which is still a headache for the government to stabilize the economy of the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Sierra Leone's ruling All People's Congress Party, the APC, has petitioned the country's Elections Commission, challenging the citizenship of opposition candidate Kande Yumkela. Sierra Leoneans will vote for president on March 7th this year. This week, an APC candidate for parliament, Abu Bakar Sankor, filed an objection to Mr. Yumkela's nomination on the grounds that Yumkela is not a Sierra Leonean because he holds a U.S. citizenship. Abdoulaye Berete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma, says the ruling party supports the objection to Mr. Yumkela's nomination.
The argument of Mr. Sanko was that Yumkela had dual citizenship, which is in contravention of Section 76(1)(a) of the 1991 Constitution. So NEC has now set the 29th of this month, whereby the initial hearing for this petition will be had. So the party has thrown its weight behind the gentleman at the said constituency, because we don't want anybody to violate the laws of the country as we move into the March 7 elections.
The provision of the constitution you're talking about says that in order for a person to be elected to parliament, they should not hold any citizenship of any other country. This provision has been there, Mr. Berete. Your ruling party, you were in power for so many years, you ignored this. In fact, some people suggest that some members of your cabinet might have had dual citizenship, and you ignore that. Why now are you pushing for this?
I agree with you. It has been there. And the APC started with its own very members by not giving them symbols because of the possible violation of Section 76(1)(a) of the very Constitution. So which means if Kande Yumkela, his spokesman, has come out very clearly that he was an American citizen and had renounced it only in November last year,
This is where I'm sure the initial hearing by NEC is going to establish a determinant whether the matter could be escalated or not. And until that happens, I will be a little bit tight to make any pointed indication or insinuation that will compromise the date set already by NEC.
Does the APC, or do you deny, or do you accept the claim that some people in your party might have held dual citizenship when they serve in this President Ernest Bai Koroma's government? Do you admit that, or do you deny?
Well, it is not a question of admitting or denying, because what the president has done, he instructed the secretary to the cabinet to issue out forms for every Mekong-City minister to establish their citizenship, whether they are only single Sierra Leonean or they hold any dual or triple citizenship. Like in the case of our own flag bearer, it has come out very clearly that even though he had the opportunity when he was in the UK for several years when he was studying there, he never applied for any citizenship in the person of Dr. Samura Kamara. So for now, the law is there. After the Secretary to Cabinet had issued out that memo for all sitting ministers to declare their citizenship status, whether it is only exclusive for Sierra Leone or if they have any other citizenship, then that way we'll be able to know the rationale behind the Secretary to the Cabinet, why the issuance on the instruction of His Excellency the President.
Okay, I'm assuming that it is the Sierra Leone Elections Commission that is going to hear this petition. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct.
So what happens if they say the commission denies Mr. Young Kelea? I mean, does he have any other legal remedy?
Well, we have laws in our country. He has the option to go through the legal process. We don't want anything again that will come and compromise the security and peace we continue to enjoy as a country.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Guinea-Bissau is once again a country without a prime minister. Since August 2015, the country has been paralyzed by continued disagreement between President José Mário Vaz and his political party, the PAIGC, on who should be running the country. Civil society leaders such as Carlos de Silva, with the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, decry the president's action and say it's time for change in Guinea-Bissau.
So far, the president hasn't chosen someone going to replace him, you know, and we are like this. I think this is just a strategy, the president's strategy, you know, to gain the time, because the car was set the deadline limit time to implementation of the Bissau and the Conakry agreement. And as the deadline was about to finish, by the end and the last day, the deadline, he decided to resign the prime minister, you know, to gain the time. When the guys from ECOWAS come, we say, no, I resign my prime minister. Now I am in the process of choosing one, you know. This is just, a strategy.
Is it kind of more of the same, or is it eliciting a reaction? Do you guys have any protests planned?
Saturday, we did a big speech. We called people. We did the speech and we told the people that we should not accept what's going on. We have to stop, you know, as the people.
Are there talks of who the new prime minister might be?
Yeah, according to the rumors, you know, there's a lot of rumors going on. Some say, the current minister of interior, that is Boche Kandi. And others suggest is the current Minister of Finance, that is Fadir. And even some are now saying that is a former Prime Minister, Kadogo Jr., that is back from exile. You know, he just come from exile three or 4 days ago, and he's back now, and the people are saying, now is one the president wants to put as a family. No one knows for certain, you know. This is humans going on.
What about the ECOWAS sanctions? When is that deadline, and is that still something that might happen?
Yeah, the deadline is over already.
and the sending people to accept the implementation of the Bissau and Conakry government. And they come to the conclusion that these political stakeholders didn't take any steps, you know, to the implementation of the Bissau and Conakry agreement. And they decide now to, you know, for the sanction. And they take the recommendation and send them to the ECOWAS. They will analyze it in this next to this coming Saturday. There was a meeting, ECOWAS meeting in Abuja again. And I think it's there that will apply the sanction for those who are refusing, you know, that are blocking the agreement, the Conakry agreement and the Bissau agreement.
That was Carlos De Silva with the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. Young Rwandan bloggers and filmmakers are working to reshape the narrative about their country. They want to move away from stories of the 1994 genocide and its aftermath towards stories of the new generation in what is now one of Africa's fastest-growing economies. Chika Odua reports for VOA from Kigali.
Gloria Iribagiza is at it again, banging out another post for her blog.
When you go and Google search, if you're out of the country, you'll see just genocide. But yet there's so much development happening here. The youth are part of a whole generation of vibrant people who are telling stories in different ways. Most of my stories that I write are more about social change and different ways in which that can impact the lives of people.
The 1994 genocide killed an estimated 800,000 people and left scars on Rwanda that last to this day. But Gloria and a group of local writers and filmmakers want to tell a different story. For Gloria, that means focusing on development issues and women and girls achieving their goals. Gloria says she feels free to go out, report, and write stories. But rights groups do continue to express concern about restrictions to free speech and political dissent in Rwanda. Other local content creators VOA spoke to declined to be interviewed on the topic. Gloria is out to meet with some colleagues at a trendy cafe. Maggie Mutesi is a journalist. Victor Kagimba is a spoken word artist. Raymond Kalionga is a 3D animator. And he creates content like this.
Right now, we try to get children who are writing stories and getting their stories out there in a moving picture.
The content is produced locally. Independent films that explore complex issues like identity and gender are also gaining attention. 25-year-old Philbert Mbabazi studied filmmaking in Europe and has returned to Rwanda to pursue his dreams.
That was reporter Chika Odua in Kigali, Rwanda. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you again to join us tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good Wednesday.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz. 19.2 meter band.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at President Donald Trump's first year in office, his successes and setbacks. We'll also take a closer look at his agenda for the year ahead. Join us for the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.